Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, neck herniations or disc herniations in the neck. We did an episode a long time ago. I don't even remember what number that would be on low back disc herniations, which I think are more common or more prevalent than neck herniations. But yeah, we specifically want to talk more into neck herniations. What are they? What can you do about them? What does the research say about conservative versus surgical and stuff like that?
We did have an experience even recently with my father-in-law, your dad.
My father.
Who had his own experience with disc herniations. And
yeah. And he, and of course, as PTs, we tend to have the bias of do what you can conservatively. Try to do as much as you can conservatively before going to a higher end intervention. And I think a lot of research supports that, at least. You know, that's what we like to look into is like, how much can we do conservatively before going to something where we're cutting or cutting into something and going a little more high level with the intervention. But my dad did a lot of that, and he is pretty diligent of patient when it comes to, hey, do this. And then almost too diligent sometimes because he's just like, all right, I'm doing these exercises every day.
Yeah, we're like, exactly. Maybe back down a little bit.
Make sure you know, give your body a chance to see how it feels and how you respond to it. But he was doing a lot, and he actually started losing a lot of strength in his arm and his kind of tricep in the back of his arm to the point where he was struggling to do a push-up, you know. And my dad is someone who can do
he's many very push-ups. Athletic.
He's very active, very strong and capable. And he was even starting to notice that he was having some muscle mass reduction on the back of his arm. So stick around to the end of the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about what he did and how he finally got symptom relief for himself, because those are some pretty high level symptoms for someone to be feeling, or some more late stage symptoms.
Yeah. And what's interesting too, when we look at these two areas that tend to be the highest in, you know, people having not only disc herniations, but just pain in general, is the neck and the low back, right?
Yeah.
And they're actually structurally pretty similar. So we do have what's called a lordotic curve. And a lot of people complain of like, oh, I have lordosis in my low back. And I say, good. You should have lordosis in your low back. So lordosis is just this natural curve that kind of goes forward. So if you think of the curve in your low back, your belly tends to kind of come forward a little bit more. I mean, we have this natural curve that kind of does drop the spine forward, and then the upper back drops and rounds back just a little bit. So we have a normal curve and flexion, and then it reverses as we come up to the neck so that we can look up, and our spine is quote unquote neutral. So that's a neutral spine. It's not a straight spine. It actually has these normal curves about it. However, it's when we start to either lose those curves that, you know, it tends to then go into a decreased space between those vertebrae. So in the spine, in the neck, I should say specifically, what tends to happen is that we tend to lose that natural lordosis, that curving of forward in the neck, because we tend to look at phones all day long or down at computers, and we're straightening out that spine. And what that straightening is doing is kind of flexing as opposed to it's straightening out, but it's just narrowing that space that we have between those vertebrae.
Yeah. And everyone's normal quote is going to be a little bit different, like what your normal lordotic curve or what your most optimal lordotic curve in your low back and in your neck is going to look like.
Yeah.
And the curve that's going to optimize space for you in a way that's functional, right? In a way that's supported. So, you know, when we say like, hey, if you're losing that curve and you're going into more flexion, that does tend to be associated with more compression or more of a compressed vertebrae and putting more pressure on the discs. And if we do that repetitively and do that over time, it could potentially be associated with more disc degeneration or more use of those discs. So that's where we'll tend to see people who have less of that lordotic curve or even have a kyphotic curve, meaning rounding forward in their neck is a little bit more predisposed or may have a higher prevalence or correlation to having some of these cervical disc herniations. And one thing that I think is really interesting, and I may be jumping ahead here, but both in the lumbar and the cervical spine, the places that we see the most percentage of these herniations in the lumbar spine, it's from like L4 to S1, mm-hmm. which is right as our lumbar spine is transitioning into the much more stable sacrum, mm-hmm. right? And in our cervical spine, it tends to be from C6 or our sixth cervical vertebrae to T1 or our first thoracic vertebrae. And our thoracic spine tends to be much more stable, mm-hmm. right? And so it's those transition areas, especially at the bottom of the cervical and lumbar spines, that we need to provide more external support to those areas to make sure that they are safe and stable, that tend to get thrown around in a sense, because the segments below them have much more natural stability. And so they're the transition areas that tend to just get overused a lot more.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, that is alluding to what we're going to talk into with the solutions and stuff. But everyone's natural reaction, if your neck starts to hurt, is to stretch it, mm-hmm. is to, you know, go into more of that lack of stability, that lack of awareness and support in that area. So it's just, it's interesting, you know, that we tend to want to either nail out that pain by rubbing into it or, you know, stretching, just providing stretches. But actually what can help is actually providing a little bit more support, stability, and bringing that neck back into a more stable place. However, we're not there yet.
But great first tip.
Yes.
Great first tip. How do we find stability? It's not necessarily about stretching or stretching these sore muscles. Those sore muscles are trying to find stability.
Yeah. But I think what's also, you know, important to note anytime we're talking about disc herniations is that it is almost a natural degeneration of the spine that tends to happen as we age. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, and it's going to become, I think, more common the more that we're involved in technology. And now we see children, right, bent over their iPads for homework and bent over computers. And so we're starting from a much younger age now, yeah. that we're in this technology phase, and we're putting our heads forward and we're straightening out that cervical spine. So it is going to happen. And I think what's important to note is that it's almost normal. Okay, the pain doesn't have to be normal. We can have solutions of how we continue to work through this. However, seeing this image isn't mean that you're abnormal. And I think that's important to note.
Yeah, there's so many more studies that are showing that when asymptomatic or populations that have no pain are imaged, you'll find a certain percentage, even like 40-year-olds. I think that there was a good 10 to 20% of people that showed up with some sort of cervical disc herniation, even at age 40, but they weren't having any symptoms. So it just shows that, yes, you can have symptoms and the image can show up and say, oh man, you have this crazy cervical disc herniation. That doesn't necessarily mean that the image will ever go away. We could image you 5 years down the road when your pain has been long gone, and they might still say, oh, you're still showing a little bit of a disc herniation in these levels. And that's okay. Because again, as long as you are relatively pain-free, and you have found a way to manage that pain if it ever comes up, or do things to find stability in that neck, great. The image might never change.
Right. So what is happening? What are people saying when they see this image of this disc herniation? I think that's important to know.
Just basic disc anatomy. The two main parts of the disc are these outer annular fibers, which are really kind of coarse, and they kind of cross each other, and that forms the outside of this disc structure. And then the inside has this fluid, like what's called the nucleus pulposus, which means just nuclear pulp or center pulp, right? That is really hydrated. It's highly, you know, water-based. And so again, that's also the structure that as we age, our body just loses water in general, which is why we tend to see the narrowing of that disc, less disc, and then it starts to degenerate more because it doesn't provide as much kind of shock absorption between the spine. And so then when we see these disc herniations on image, what's happening is more often than not, some of that nucleus pulposus is showing that it's protruding out towards the back of the disc, right? And there's four different stages. I'll go through quickly. Disc bulge essentially is showing, hey, we're seeing some of that nucleus pulposus displacing backwards into those annular fibers. Number two is protrusion, which are a protruding disc, means it's pushing into the fibers, and we're seeing the nucleus pulposus make some ground, maybe even through some of the fibers, but it hasn't completely broken through the annular fibers yet. Extrusion, or an extruded disc, is showing that some of that nucleus pulposus has actually made it through the annular fibers and is now poking into the spinal canal. And a sequestrated disc is when some of that nucleus pulposus actually becomes detached and becomes more of a floating body in the spinal canal. And I would say for the most part, for the, you know, the grand majority of these happen at the first two stages.
Yeah.
And then we start to get a lot of the extruded discs, but you rarely see a sequestrated disc.
Right. And so this displacement of this nucleus pulposus, and that's what's really causing that inflammatory state that starts to happen. And then we start to push into these nerve roots that are coming out of the vertebrae.
Yeah.
And so when we get irritation to the nerve root, that's when we get like those symptoms that can come down the arm. So it's not always so concentrated at the neck anymore. Now we start to feel symptoms. Maybe it's down toward the shoulder blade, or it's down the arm. Maybe it's even into the fingers. So we might see it more in like the thumb through the middle finger, or we might see it more the ring finger and the pinky, you know. And so we start to get these different levels that it's happening at. And that's kind of how we can determine the level, whether it's at C6 or, you know, C5, C6, that like all of these are super common. C5, C6, C6, C7. Those are going to be the most common places that we're seeing this disc herniation kind of happen. And it's not necessarily, I would say, as important for you as a listener to know exactly what level and exactly what's happening. It's just what can you start to do about it? I think that's what more people want to know.
Yeah, and being another nerve injury, of course, we associate it with words like tingly, burny, numbness. You know, sometimes that's where it'll progress into shooting type pains. And again, like Jen said, we aren't necessarily going to feel it at our neck all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like the C8 dermatome is the one that's all the way down kind of on our pinky side. So you might just be feeling it on the pinky and the inside of your forearm. And that's where a lot of the times you'll go into a physical therapist and they'll start messing around with your neck and you'll feel a difference in that pain.
Yeah.
And it'll seem like voodoo magic, but really that's where the issue is. It's up at the neck. You're just feeling the symptoms downstream in the hand.
And that's why it's also, I think, you know, anytime you have a nerve type issue, it is so important to go see a physical therapist in person, because just trying to figure it out, like we've now had multiple podcasts on tingling hands, one from thoracic outlet to carpal tunnel to cubital tunnel syndrome, now on disc herniations of the neck. So all of this saying that there can be many reasons why you're having tingling at that hand, and it might not be a neck issue. It might not be an elbow issue. You know, I mean, there's so many different reasons, and maybe a multitude of reasons that are causing the pain, and you won't really know until you get it properly assessed, because just trying to move your neck around and kind of see what's happening might not be the thing. That we just don't want you to mess around so much that you're really kind of exasperating pain issues. So I think seeing a physical therapist in person, working through exactly where the pain, why you're having that nerve issue in the first place, and getting it assessed properly and doing the proper tests at the neck is really important. And then understanding the nerve exercises, which we'll tap on, but again, working with someone in person, which is what we talked about a lot too on our other episode, when we talked about nerve type pain and nerve type issues, we talk about going to see a physical therapist in person, because getting specific exercises based on what you need is going to help to make sure that you're progressing properly rather than advancing to a level that your body's not quite ready for.
And of course, if you're generally getting this diagnosed anyway, like because of an image or something, they will generally be recommending you or referring you out to either a specialist, hopefully a physical therapist, but we find, even by looking into the research, that doesn't happen nearly as much as we feel it should.
Yeah.
Sometimes the referral will go straight into an orthopedist or a surgeon or something, which of course we're a proponent of. What can you do conservatively? Maybe see a PT to check that out. And there are a lot of contributing factors when you see the people who do end up showing up with these and having symptomatic versions of these cervical disc herniations. It tends to be people who may have had trauma in the neck or may consistently go into end in extreme ranges. What are some other ones?
In general, we're looking at, let's look at populations that have, you know, an increased risk factor for some of these things. So We look at manual workers. So people who are bending down, looking over people, dentists, their dental assistants, right? They're always in someone's mouth and looking forward, looking down. Same with things like
teenage gamers.
Same with populations like surgeons. So anyone that's like looking down and looking forward, or you're putting extreme pressure and tension on the neck, like we looked into the research and we're looking at, they're talking about astronauts
and fighter pilots.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense to me,
but
because
it does,
they have
make sense.
Tons of G-force on their neck, and they may be trying to, you know, actively resist against that. And that could cause a lot of pressure in the neck.
Well, and it's interesting, too, looking at, you know, it, we're not just talking about sustained pressures here. Yes, if you're sitting in front of a phone or a computer for a long extended period of time, or you're working like over a person, but also if you're going into forces and range of motion that is exceeding what your body can tolerate. So whether that is from strength, the ligaments that are around the area, if you're going into a range of motion or into a force like in these pilots that can't sustain that pressure, well, then we're going to get to an area that becomes weakened in the tissue that can be more prone to injury like disc herniations.
Which is where I feel like manual labor, you know, a lot of different manual labor jobs, you might see things like this as well, because we're bent over our work. We're doing a lot working in front of us, maybe lifting a lot of things. So
that, and if you're over the age of 50, I mean, that was another just risk factor.
Because as we age, like we mentioned before, we get that dehydration of the discs. They become less able to do their jobs, not completely unable to do their jobs, but we might try something we were used to doing when we were younger, and hey, that disc isn't quite at the place it used to be. Mm-hmm. So we just have to be more prepared for that. So when we're looking at, we talked a little bit earlier about when we're looking at what we can do about this, what can we do to set up our neck for success?
So this is where it's always best to understand as we continue to, because we're not going to change jobs automatically. We're not going to stop looking at our phones and our computers. But I think the number one thing we have to remember is that we want to change up our positions more often throughout the day. And we're going to go through specific exercises that you can do for the neck specifically, right? And for these areas specifically. But overall, always, always the most important thing is that you're changing positions more so throughout the day. You're catching yourself when you're really coming forward. And what are you doing to bring your body out of that? Or you just did surgery, or you're just working on a client who came in as your dentist or anything like that. Well, what are you doing directly after that? And that's going to be what's most impactful, is what we're doing more so throughout the day, rather than just continuing to repeat these patterns and falling into this pain pattern over and over again.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about that natural lordosis curve, or the extended curve in our cervical spine. So kind of returning there and seeing how that feels. So when you have a break, whether even if it's because you work at a computer and you've just been working for a long time, when you have a break, what's it feel like to completely open up the arms and open up the chest and extend your neck back a little bit, right? And do that 10 times and then get back to work. You know, doing something like that consistently, where if you take a break every hour and do something like that, that can be what starts to move the needle and moves your normal a little bit more from that forward flexed position to a more natural extended cervical spine.
And this is where it is so important. So there were studies that showed that, you know, especially under the age of 40, so people who had disc herniations that are popping up and you're in the younger population, there's a lot of research that can support starting to restore this natural curve and go into exercises as well that help to restore this natural curve in our spine is going to help to reduce the risk of needing surgery. And why not, right? If I can reduce what's happening in my pain, my symptoms, and even the image, just by starting to restore what I'm doing at my neck, well, then that's so important. And so one of the tools that therapists, clinicians, chiropractors, physical therapists might use a lot is just having you starting to lay on what looks like a dowel that's kind of like in this upside down U shape, and you're starting to lean over it and just naturally start to build pressure of putting that neck in kind of what feels like an uncomfortable position at first. But putting your neck in that position, and even if you were to just lay down at the end of the day, especially if you sit at your desk all day and you're leaning forward toward a computer, if you were to just lean over that, 5-10 minutes a day, that can even just start to restore it. But however, again, we can't just passively lay on something and expect change. We have to actively do some things too.
Or even just laying flat on your back without a pillow or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not used to that, that can feel like, whoa, where's the ground? You know, like how far into extension do I have to go to just lay there without a pillow, and then working onto something like a half bolster or half foam roller, or using a foam roller at home if that's, you know, starts to become comfortable for you. But then, like you said, how do we promote stability? And one place a lot of PTs will go is a chin tuck, mm-hmm. you know, just teaching a good proper, what we call cervical retraction, where you're kind of retracting your chin back and getting those deep neck muscles to activate and support the front of the neck. That's great, especially if you start to do that and then actively go into extension, which mm-hmm. is kind of the next step, like getting that chin tuck and then actively extending. Mm-hmm. Chin tuck, active extension.
His voice is going crazy because he's
doing it right.
I think what's really important too, though, is like I've seen chin tucks and people kind of look down. And what you're doing if you look down when you chin tuck is you're just making you're decreasing that curve even more because you're going into more of a flex state of that neck. So you definitely don't want to look down. You want to think of kind of making a double chin kind of coming back, but also the top of your head is kind of coming up. So it makes you go back into that retracted position, which is going to help with that lordotic curve naturally. And we start to, now if you're laying down flat or you're laying down over that dowel and you're starting to restore some of that range of motion, well, now we're doing it actively. So it's so important to not only do it passively, but to also get into those active states. And this is where it, you know, where can I do this? Can I do this just while I'm sitting at work? Just a couple times, if you remember, you know, can you do it when you're in your car? I love doing it in my car specifically. I can just kind of tuck my chin and lean back into the headrest, you know, and then I put pressure and I put tension and I put some active work into it. Of course, I don't have a disc herniation that I know of right now, so I'm not working through pain. So you have to go to pain tolerance as well. You want to make sure that you're not really pushing that envelope too much.
And this is kind of a good rule if you then start to explore in any other plane. You know, mm-hmm. our neck is crazy and amazing because it can move in every plane, and that also makes it challenging because it has the ability to do so much mobility. That's where we get ourselves in trouble a little bit. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to then start exploring maybe even some of those neck stretches that a PT might, you know, prescribe and say like, oh, do this to like stretch out your upper traps or stretch out the scalenes on the side of your neck, and they want you to do like a ear to shoulder stretch, tuck that chin first, get that little chin tuck, and then start going ear to shoulder. And you may notice how much quicker you feel that stretch, because if we're not tucking, we might be letting our neck extend because those muscles are so tight, essentially. So we're compensating to make the stretch easier rather than tucking and then going to do the stretch. And then that's going to elicit the stretch a lot quicker, let us sit there, breathe into it while our neck feels safe, rather than just cranking it to an end range.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you can then start to tip the nose just a little bit different places. So if you tuck the chin, lean to the side, and now tip the nose up toward the ceiling, you get what's called like an SEM stretch a little bit. And then if you tip the nose down towards your armpit, as you stretch over, you get a little bit more into that levator scap that comes from like your scapular region or your shoulder blade up into the neck. So we can get into these different areas again, always looking at what is my pain tolerance and making sure I'm not pushing into pain too much. But we don't want to just look at the neck, because what is the neck sitting on top of? Our upper back.
Mm, ding, ding, ding.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. I was just messing around.
But our thoracic spine, and this is where a physical therapist or a chiro or anyone, a lot of the times, especially when you're having a lot of severe pain in the neck, the research shows too, if we're just starting to mobilize and kind of manipulate the thoracic spine or the upper back, we help to relieve some pain in the neck.
Yeah, because like we said at the beginning, if we have an extended lower back, or if we have that excessive lordosis in our lower back, that's going to make our upper back want to tend to round, which then will affect the spine. So if we have an excessive curves in our upper back where we might be rounding forward, that's going to really affect what our neck is doing. So I love that. And doing any sort of mobility in our upper back, this is one thing that I love to do when I do every, you know, daily or in the morning, if I even just lay down and do a couple, what you call a W exercise, where you're just lifting your arms up and extending them, or to get both upper back extension and neck extension, just propping up on your elbows, pressing up on your hands a few times. That's going to be great to just mobilize upper back and neck together a bit.
Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, if I round in my upper back, so you just sit there and kind of round into that upper back, it's automatically kind of jutting that chin forward. And it's hard to kind of get into a good position here, right? But then if I think of like kind of lifting my upper back, keep the rib cage down. We don't want to overextend from that low back, but keeping that rib cage down, can I lift into my chest, my sternum? And that automatically aligns my neck without having to do anything in my neck. And I think that's what's so incredible about the, when we learn to really program the body together, when we learn to use that breath, which we talk about all the time, on the sides of the rib cage. So if we learn to use that breath on the sides of the rib cage, we kind of help to stack that body more naturally, which automatically is going to stack that neck without, again, having to do so much. So when we're talking about those change of postures, those change of positions, well, what if I just think about breathing from my low rib cage and expanding to the sides of my low rib cage? All of a sudden, I'm sitting up taller. My posture is improved. I'm not putting so much tension on my neck, and there's not so much pressure that where I feel like I need to stretch it out all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You can still do the laying down on your back in the passive extension. You can still do the chin tucks. You can still do all this stuff, but we're starting to now mobilize and put our body just in a better place naturally.
Yeah, no, and I think that's huge. I've mentioned this on multiple podcasts before, that when I start getting my upper back and neck pain, if I just focus on doing a few breaths to the ribs, like, that resolves it more than anything, more than like trying to crank side to side or crack my neck. Like, I have multiple times during this podcast already, just taking some breaths to the rib cage is great. And that's something where we've done this before, where you kind of wrap that band around mm-hmm. your low rib cage. Like, you can do that, wrap your band around your low rib cage, and then put your dress shirt on and work for an hour with that thing around there. And kind of every time you think about it, think to take a deep breath right up against that band. And you can keep working while you're doing this. And then every time you notice that band down there, just be like, okay, breathe into and expand my ribs against that band. That's going to go a long way to kind of setting that core, so your upper back and neck feel like they have a stable foundation to rest on.
And then we're not breathing from the neck so much. Like, a lot of the times those neck muscles get overused when they're not necessary. The only time we should be using our upper neck and our upper trap when we're breathing is if we're doing like a heavy activity, or we're really going on a sprint run several times, right? But otherwise, we shouldn't be using these muscles around the neck. So if they're always turning on, we need to come back to what's happening at the rib cage. Again, that's just going to help to align things. We can work on exercises like scapular stability, right? Working on making sure you have awareness of those shoulder blades. Can you feel them come down? Can you feel those lower edge of the shoulder blade kind of move forward, back, and just gaining awareness of your body, I think is so extremely powerful in order to help you heal. There's no just one exercise. There's no just one tool. There's no just one manipulation that's going to get you out of pain. It's really putting all of this back together. And let's talk about a little bit what your dad did.
Yeah. So like we were saying, my dad did as many of the conservative options as he could. He is a physician. He does do surgery as well. So he's in kind of that population where he's bent forward a lot. The times that he's not bent forward, he's running around a very high paced, stressed work environment. And so my dad kind of runs at that high level anyway. And he ended up getting more or less a disc replacement, or a disc, I don't know what they would call it, an arthroplasty. So they essentially are replacing that disc joint, which is a relatively newer surgery, but has a fairly high success rate for people that end up going that route. And it really, as soon as he came out of surgery, he's like, wow, that alleviated my symptoms almost completely. And then he was able to start working back into a lot of those exercises quite a bit more. So, you know, not to say that surgery isn't going to give you a lot of benefit. And there are different routes that a surgeon may recommend depending on your situation. There are microdiscectomies, which they kind of just go in and try and take out a portion of a disc that is extruding or sequestrated. There are laminectomies, where they take out a bit of the bone actually to provide more space. Sometimes they might come in conjunction with fusions to give that lower spine more stability. Again, we could give some of our thoughts on those, but I think our main thought is, before going to any of those, making sure we're trying a lot of the conservative routes, which my dad did, before saying, hey, I'm losing strength, I'm losing some of my muscle mass. And that was for him, after a few months of that, he's like, I need to start talking to a surgeon more seriously.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so important, though, like, especially if now it's getting into the muscle wasting, and you're losing strength, atrophy within that muscle, I think that's really important to understand then, okay, we're going into this level that can affect my everyday life, my daily tasks. And when it comes to that point and you're doing the conservative treatment, you're doing the exercises and you're trying to do the most and it's still not becoming impactful, that's when we can look. If it's more pain related, if it's more tingling, if it's more numbness, but it goes away and it comes back, that's when we want to really work at, okay, what are the tools that we're not quite adding into our life yet that could really benefit us here? Can I restore more range of motion in my neck? Can I restore more stability? Can I do a little bit more for the breath and the upper back? That's just what we want to say here is like, you know, we're not against surgery at all. There's 100% of time and place. They're getting better at the procedures that they do. Yeah. It's very minimally invasive. So it's just you end up with really good results. So just sometimes what we've also seen, though, are friends who go down that route too quickly. And then they end up needing more after that.
Yeah, because they haven't instilled this mentality of, hey, I'm going to do everything I can to actively support my body, actively find the exercises. And they are just trying to find that quick, passive, more or less passive fix. They're just like, okay, the surgery, once I do the surgery, everything will be fixed. We're finding that even the surgeries that are successful, like my dad has done quite a bit of therapies. He is continuing to focus on what he can do to support the area around his neck so that he doesn't develop those tendencies again. Mm-hmm. Because there are more cervical discs in there and there are more ways that he could re-injure something in that area if he doesn't start to try and reverse some of those habits and patterns. And of course, with the new Gen Health platform, there is a whole neck and upper back plan. So anybody out there who does just have general neck pain or has been dealing with a nagging neck issue that they haven't been able to resolve, go check out the Gen Health platform. There's a free week where you can hop in, try the free week trial, get into that neck and upper back plan. And Gen addresses a lot of these different areas, whether it is finding stability in our core all the way to our rib cages or working our shoulder blades, doing neck stability exercises like the chin tucks. You'll find that all in there.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode. And like Dom said, that neck plan is in there for you. So if you are having pain or issues, chronic pains that continue to come back in the neck, please check out gen.health. We're going to drop the link, but you can also just type in gen.health. No.com, no nothing else. And hopefully we'll see you back on another episode of the Optimal Body Podcast, where we deliver more on Mondays in terms of pains and issues and things that you can directly do for those pains. And then every Wednesday we have an awesome podcast guest. So I hope you continue to come on, subscribe, and please leave a rating review if you're loving what you're hearing.